Boom, what up? Hello, bonjour, and hola, real leaders. This is Kevin Edwards, your host here, and I am so excited you're tuning in to one of our amazing experiences. What you're about to hear is going to be fresh, real, and loaded with inspiration, guaranteed to support your impact journey. So sit back, enjoy the listen, folks, share a review afterward, and always keep it real. In 5, 4, 3, 2, and 1. Welcome everyone to this episode of the Real Leaders Podcast. I'm your host, Kevin Edwards, and joining us today, folks, got the founder and CEO of a company called Panties. Please give a warm welcome to Miss Emily Yule. Emily from Sao Paulo, Brazil. How are we doing today?
Great, Kevin. It's so great to be here with you all. Share a little bit about our journey of impact.
Of course. Well, if I didn't mention beforehand, Panties is a certified B Corp. Another certified B Corp who's made the Really Top Impact Companies list. And Emily, we had a good opportunity to catch back up at SoCap, which was awesome, and learn a little bit about kind of the world of Panties. But for those who may not be so familiar with the organization, the mission, the concept, and kind of how this all came to be, I think people want to know, where did it begin?
Now, well, I guess I worked for 15 years in the healthcare industry. Started in strategy consulting, like many people right out of college, very curious, very excited. And I think the healthcare space is such an interesting area because it's a multi-trillion dollar business, but it's also a human right. So it's an area where you see a lot of technology, a lot of innovation, a lot of disruption, but at the same time, you have this side of kind of equity and access. And it's a very complex market. So I think that's something that always really attracted me to the space. And you know, after doing my MBA, and I did a master's at public health also in Berkeley in California, not too far from you, I moved to Switzerland and worked with a pharma company there that brought me to Brazil on a really amazing project, and fell in love with the country. I mean, it's having worked in the US and Europe and a number of different markets, Brazil is a country that has amazing talent. It's a huge population. And so it's really a place that's perfect for startups to test and innovate and kind of create new solutions. And I really kind of saw it as a special opportunity for me to leave the corporate space, which is always kind of a risk. You know, I feel like people that start in that kind of corporate environment to leave that, it feels like kind of jumping off of a train moving in one direction, you know? And start something that I really believed in. You know, I think that when you work in a big company too, sometimes you feel like you're doing a very small part of something that's big and, you know, maybe hard to change. Or even if you're doing something innovative within the company, which I was fortunate to be doing. And so I started looking for opportunities here. And as a chemical engineer, very excited about kind of product innovation and, you know, menstrual underwear obviously exists, had other brands that existed in other markets. But at that time, most of the value proposition was focused on leak-proof products. So markets where tampons are predominantly the main use or preferred use of products for customers. And the menstrual underwear was used to help prevent leaks in conjunction with basically tampons or menstrual cups. In Brazil, Latin America, and a lot of other parts of the world, Asia, Southern Europe, for example, 90% of the markets use external pads, menstrual pads, which are the most wasteful, the least comfortable. They take, for example, over 500 years to decompose. They're not made of usually 100% cotton, the kind of standard ones. So really bad for the environment. And they're also expensive. It's something that, you know, a woman has to buy every month. That is an extra expense for her. And so I really saw in Brazil, being based here at that time, an opportunity to say, you know, transitioning from menstrual pads to menstrual underwear and designing a product that's actually highly absorptive, which didn't really exist in the market. You can actually replace disposable products with a reusable menstrual underwear. So we designed a product that's patented in a number of countries, including the US, Brazil, China, South Africa, many countries. And so our product is proprietary and as the first brand in Latin America. And I think, beyond being a functional product, we also knew that we had to build a movement around the product. So mobilize a community, create a brand that's very desirable, that does a lot of storytelling. And I think that that was really different, when at that time, even trying to talk to PR agencies and stuff here, people said, oh, is it going to be like a pharmacy product? They have in their idea like a female diaper for adults, and so we had to really break that taboo, not just around menstruation, because it's not a topic that, many people feel comfortable talking about, but also around a new product category and trying to build a new category in a market that, is nascent. But we were very lucky. We had a very strong launch and fortunately have been growing. We're the leader in the market here today. So it's exciting.
It is exciting. I mean, well, I appreciate you taking the time to share. And I think, anytime you do something great, right? Whether it's someone building the next, iPhone or, next pet rock, right? You always get hit with criticism, right? You always get hit with, well, it's not this, it's not this. And everyone thinks they're an expert. What were some of the initial rejections that pop into your mind or criticism that you recall that was challenging for you?
I think we got criticism from every side before we launched and in the launching process. So, for example, the very beginning, working with factories, going and trying to talk to factories about, well, we have this concept and we had already developed the liner technology, but needed to construct it into a product. And even the factory that agreed to do our first lot for us looked at us and said, she works with a lot of big brands in Brazil. And she said, you guys are never going to sell this stock. I work with like big brand and you're buying even more than they are. And we were very lucky. We sold all of our stock. We thought we had 3 months of stock. We sold it in 3 weeks. And so we had kind of a problem where the launch was so strong and that there was such an appetite and readiness in the market for this product that it was great because it helped really validate quickly. That the timing, that the product is good, that the timing is good, and that our strategy for launch was good. But I think that in general, our biggest challenge has always been kind of addressing taboos around the product and psychological barriers around transitioning from a disposable product to a reusable product. So questions around, does it work? Is it, hygienic, for example, is it going to be gross to be menstruating into a pair of underwear? And I think that a lot of women have traumas of leaks, and the idea of menstruating into a pair of underwear just triggers that kind of sense of, they associate that with leaks, or especially as a teenager, a lot of things that, girls go through as a part of, starting to menstruate. And so I think that education has been a really important strategy for us to try to address those barriers and a lot of those challenges. And a lot of word of mouth too. So influencers, for example, for years we didn't do any paid influencer activity because our product was such a content, it was almost like a opening up a space for people to talk about something that they'd never been able to talk about before. And we had a lot of influencers that loved the product. And so they would just openly talk about it. But it's hard for people to hear a brand say that it works, that it's amazing, that it's going to change your life. It's different when they hear a real person say that. So that's something that we've had to really focus a lot on in building community and creating that space where women can have that dialogue versus the brand just communicating outward to people. And I think that's a big change too in terms of marketing and communications in the past 15 years is less focusing on one-way communication, but more of a dialogue and asking sometimes more questions than answering as a brand even.
That makes a lot of sense. And I guess what's resonating with me is one of my first interviews I did with a company called G Diapers, and the talking point is 50 million diapers a day go into landfills. 50, that's a lot of shit, right? That's 50 million diapers a day going into landfills. And then the idea was, let's create a reusable diaper, right? And so I remember the struggles in speaking with Jason and Kim afterward and just It was really the customer issue is what they were dealing with. You know, it was more of in like any business, right? Like you've got to understand that customer, you got to educate them, you got to talk to them if you want to be a disruptor in the space. So it's great to hear that, you know, maybe influencers or people outside the organization has it been an effective tool, if I'm hearing that right, to kind of drive that growth. I want to ask you that question. Is that, I mean, in terms of like this product, you kind of talk about being in a healthcare company. How have you been able to get that message out there pre-influencer? Like how tell me like a little bit about that process and those growing pains.
Yeah, in terms of, I think especially because I came from the healthcare industry, I've always viewed the business as a healthcare business. And I think that that is, I say that we're a healthcare business disguised as a lingerie or apparel business. And so on the outside, our products look like they're apparel products, but people don't buy them because they're underwear or because they're, you know, fitness clothes or they are swimwear. They buy them because they're functional for a specific health purpose and health needs. So, you know, I love that kind of like jobs theory, you know, like what problem are you solving? What job are you fulfilling in the customer? And so for us, that is a health need. And I think that comes through a lot in the communications and also the way a lot of different initiatives that we've done as a brand. So today we are the only clinically approved menstrual underwear brand in the world. And I think that a lot of that comes from the fact that coming from the healthcare industry, any pharmaceutical drug or medical device or even menstrual product that would be regulated by the FDA, for example, would have to pass certain tests or clinical trials that prove that it's safe and effective. Everybody now knows what a clinical trial is because of COVID. Thankfully, anybody who's studied public health, like I have, we study these things. But you know, it is a very important process in making sure that you're not creating harm for populations of consumers. And so I felt that it was a very strong responsibility for us as a brand to actually design and go through clinical studies to show that we have the same level of safety and efficacy as any menstrual product in the market or better, which is what we found out. And then we also did quality of life studies with our product. So showing that, for example, 3 out of 4 women that use our product forget that they're menstruating or that they're on their period. So creating such a sense of liberty as if it's a normal day for them. And for me, that's like the ultimate goal. 100% reduction in sleep disturbance, which has a huge impact in terms of productivity, in terms of quality of life, you know, over a double sense of feeling hygienic or feeling clean using panties compared to traditional menstrual products. So we really, I think, different from other brands that focused more maybe on, you know, it's a new product and it works, but we've done a lot of tests on our products too around safety and kind of the chemical side, for example. Our liner technology doesn't use silver because many women, especially dermatologically, are allergic to silver. And so I think that that's a little bit of a different view of the business than what we see in terms of the market today. And communicating that. Yeah, trying to educate consumers on that too.
It's definitely a different approach, and and what a great, you know, I guess tidbit to kind of share with folks that you're tested, you're approved, and essentially certified. It really builds the credibility. Now, I just in the recent video, over 2 million products sold already, an enormous feat. I mean, when you hit the 1 million mark, I mean, what was going through your mind? Did you ever think in your wildest dreams you'd hit not just 1 but 2 million products sold? And also, so I'd ask you that question first, and then also, like, where do you see this going? Like, what is the scale for this?
Yeah, well, I think first it was amazing. I mean, as an entrepreneur and with my co-founder Duda as well, I mean, we're a bootstrap business. We started the company in a very lean way and said, let's get it to the market and see what happens. And we've been so thankful for our journey that we've been able to grow the business and scale the business with the cash flow of the business coming in for the past 6 years. In terms of the future, I mean, this is a product that it's different than selling, you know, a new brand of shoes or a new brand of t-shirts or sunglasses or something, because it requires a behavior change from the consumer. And so it's not something where from 1 year to the next you're going to start seeing hyper growth, but it is a market that's growing a lot globally. And I do think that a decade from now, probably every woman globally will have a pair of menstrual underwear in her drawer. And so that's what we're focused on. Because if you think about it today, every woman that uses, whether she uses pads or tampons or menstrual cups, she also wears a pair of underwear. So it's almost like a two-in-one product that you can use. You can use our product both to complement other methods that you use, or you can actually substitute other methods with our product. So it's, for me, it's going to become the largest segment within the category and grow pretty dramatically over the next few decades. And so while we were born in Brazil and obviously really focused on technology and portfolio, you know, we work very closely with the factories. 100% of our production is in Brazil. So now we have, you know, a swim line, we have a fitness line, we have a line for first menstruation, we have a line for trans men who menstruate, we have a pharmacy line in partnership with Johnson & Johnson. So we've really focused on a lot of innovations, a maternity line. We were the first to launch absorbent leak-proof nursing bras in the world. And so I think that really innovating and looking for those gaps in terms of, you know, what needs aren't being met today and how can we really disrupt different segments of the market. And then, you know, in other markets, like, you know, we launched in Selfridges in the UK and Galeries Lafayette in France. And so we've been kind of stepping one step at a time with some of our global expansion. But that's also a huge opportunity because there's so many markets that are asking for this product. And we already have a very robust portfolio.
Well, clearly, if there's a huge need, if Johnson & Johnson is knocking on your door and, you know, asking to collaborate together, when they reached out to you to partner, what was it about this new product line that they found so intriguing?
So they reached out to us right after we launched our first physical store. And so we started as a digital brand and then eventually opened up our own physical retail locations. All of our locations are in Brazil and fully owned by us. And I think that it just kind of caught their attention a little bit, like, wow, this is really interesting. And, you know, our first store was set up as a female bathroom, like a women's bathroom with a big tub filled with pillows and like kind of very conceptual and like fun. And the idea was not to create a space that was overly commercial, but to create a space that brought the storytelling of the brand and brought this kind of intimate atmosphere where even women could come and talk about their first menstruation, talk about their, you know, menstrual pains or talk about taboos. And so it became kind of like a laboratory in a space of exchange and dialogue with consumers as well. So after we opened that store, they reached out to us and I was a little skeptical. I used to work with Johnson & Johnson as well in my previous career. And I did a fellowship with them during my MBA. So I love the company. You know, they have their credo and I think really hearts in the right place as a business in trying to create good and impact in the market. But I was a little skeptical because, you know, direct competitor, all of our communication at that time was against disposable products. But it was a huge opportunity for us. And I think we see, when you think about impact, it's really important to think about democratizing your product and reaching more people, because the more people you can reach, especially with our type of product where we directly have an environmental impact and a social impact with each product sold, if we can hit and reach a whole new group of consumers, we can really massively scale our impact as well. And so that was really my reaction in trying to design a way that we could do that. And we proposed launching a collaborative product for the pharmacy channel, which was a channel that we didn't operate yet. We had never done wholesale. And so they actually helped facilitate us entering the pharmacy channel and also helped us convince the pharmacies that this was an interesting space, that it's a new product, that it has a lot of potential. Because at that time, and even now, most of these buyers are also, you know, men who have been working for decades in the space. And it's very hard to bring in new, totally different products, especially products that maybe have some taboo around, you know, reuse has taboo compared to disposable in general. And so it was really helpful that they helped bring down a lot of barriers for us to make that entry. And it was a huge success. So we became the single brand that had the most market share growth in that the biggest pharmacy chain in Brazil the year after we launched with them. So it really, it showed that not just the brand and the product is highly relevant, but also that there's a huge, you know, financial success associated with that as well.
Well, again, congratulations on the success with that and, you know, turning competition into collaboration. I guess I'm still like trying to understand, like, for Johnson & Johnson, like, what do you think, like, why wouldn't they just create it themselves? Right. Like what was it? Like, what did they want from you?
Yeah, I think, we had built a strong enough brand and community. So for example, at that time and still today, we have way more followers on Instagram than they do. We have much more engagement. You know, their business, when you're in a wholesale type business, you don't have a lot of direct contact with the consumer. And we had a lot of contact with our consumers, both in physical stores and online. And so beyond just the product, I think that they saw that the whole package was very attractive. And I mean, now we have about a 60% brand awareness in Brazil in just 6 years, which is a pretty amazing, you know, nationally result. And so I think they saw that there was a lot of benefit to partnering with us versus trying to do it by themselves. And I think one of the biggest benefits, and we didn't expand into other product categories with them, but we have a strong co-creation mindset around innovation with our community. So we use that, social media and all of our channels that we have in contact with the consumer to really understand their needs. And so, for example, our nursing bra that I mentioned, that came from a consumer that commented on Instagram, "Oh, why don't you guys have an absorbent liner for women that are breastfeeding?" And so then we said, "Oh, well, let's talk about this." And we sent a DM to them on Instagram and started talking. And then we actually used several people had made similar comments in different channels, and we engaged them in the product development directly, which is something we had a whole system for tagging customers and then actually engaging them in product development. So anything that would be like a criticism that eventually we would launch another product around, we would then engage those people in actually helping us. So we would send them pilot products, get their feedback, and it became like an amazing customer experience in terms of, you know, loyalty, in terms of advocacy for these individuals. But for panties, it's the best way to do product innovation and product development, because we're not hiring a research company to go out and do surveys. You know, these are like super expensive, surveys and types of reports as well, and come back where then we draw our own insights and say, "Oh, I think we need to launch these products." And actually, this is them. We're actually launching products based on real people's needs. And people that are already in our community, and you know, whether they're consumers or not, have directly communicated to us that they have this need. And so I think that that's a really interesting storytelling. And I think that Johnson & Johnson saw that type of engagement as something that would be strategically beneficial for them as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's like the best feedback you could get. Another model for innovation is really just, hey, how do we turn criticism or feedback or critiques into our innovative model? It's very similar to what Patagonia did with their organic cotton supply chain. Every time they ran into a constraint, that became the path forward for innovation. And so it's really interesting to see like how you've grown, how you've done that, and really changes my mind on how we could be thinking about, you know, our community, our channels, you know, how, our messaging, how we innovate. So it's really incredibly helpful. I'd love to dive in a little bit more about now into like the next phase of panties, like where you want to go, the impact you want to create. When I asked you the question, like, how do you define impact and what's the impact you want to have? How do you answer that?
Wow. I mean, I think we definitely think about impact both in terms of people and planet. But I think for us as a business, and also for me as a leader, I really like to push the envelope on impact. So I don't like to do what everyone else is doing. I like to think about what are people not doing yet that they should be doing, and how can we as a brand create movements or do things that can inspire other brands to maybe think differently about whatever they're doing. So, for example, we were the first fashion brand in Brazil to launch carbon labels. And we launched in 2020. We hired a company called Way Carbon that is a globally certified carbon assessor, and they also do compensation and everything as well. But we had to work with them to define a methodology around creating carbon labeling for apparel in Brazil, because at that time, just I think nutrition or food labels, I think they're the most early adopters in terms of carbon labeling. And for us, it was such an amazing experience because my goal was to bring more transparency to the consumer. And I'm trying to think about ways, how can we communicate that the product is more sustainable to the consumer? So when we first launched, it was really the communication was around, you know, each product that you buy or every consumer that adopts panties will stop using, you know, up to 15,000 disposable products across her lifetime. In Brazil, every year, 15 billion menstrual pads are disposed into landfills. So it's actually one of the countries that has the largest consumption and disposal in the world. And so that was kind of the early communication was around avoiding waste. But then we started hearing a lot of questions from consumers around, but is the product sustainable? And it really got me thinking because I said, you know, the truth is, and this is a little taboo, but there's no such thing as a sustainable product. A sustainable product doesn't exist. 100% sustainable company doesn't exist. And that is a little taboo. It's about being more sustainable. And I think for me, sustainability and impact is around being transparent and having a determination to constantly improve. In every aspect of the business, whether socially or environmentally. And so today we're here, but tomorrow we're going to be a little bit better. And then a year from now, we're going to be much better. And so we've used a lot of the B Corp process and kind of methodology because they have a point system. It is extremely helpful to help us with that journey because you can see in each of the pillars that they have in the assessment ways that you can actually be more sustainable. But for us, the carbon labeling initiative was such an amazing self-awareness journey into, well, where actually are we emitting a lot of carbon in our process? And while we produce 100% kind of locally, regionally, one thing that really surprised me is that a lot of our emissions came from consumer use and specifically chemical-based laundry detergent, which is horrible for the environment. And so we did on our carbon label, we did use and disposal as well. So end of life, we did a 360 compensation and analysis of the product. And so we actually then designed a biodegradable coconut-based laundry detergent that also has enzymes that uses to break down menstrual fluid or you know, milk from breastfeeding. So it breaks down the proteins of any natural fluids in our liners. And that is now like one of our bigger product categories after apparel is our laundry detergent. So, and that reduces our impact because we said, when we did our analysis, we said, look, this is crazy that in the product use, that that's actually horrible for the environment. And one of our biggest carbon emissions is actually the consumers, you know, something that's not in our supply chain directly. So there's a lot of insights that come from that. And I think that as a leader, we need to always be thinking out of the box and trying to push the envelope. You know, we do, for example, on the social side, a lot of work with menstrual poverty. Do donations. We have a way for our consumers to help us donate, which each post that a consumer makes in social media, we make a donation. So we thank them for their posts and sharing our products by making a donation on their behalf. And we actually write on their posts where the product was donated because we want to bring that transparency on which nonprofit or which organization did their donation go. And so very different kind of, you know, radical transparency and, you know, how can we really make the consumers feel like they're a part of the impact and that it's not panties institutional brands doing the impact. I think that's really important that, you know, it's not about us, it's about the consumers. And at the end of the day, they're the ones that drive the impact with their choices, right? So we're, as a company, we can innovate and create a lot of sustainable, more sustainable products. But if the consumers don't choose to make more sustainable choices, then our impact is zero. So, right. So we really think about that. Yeah. A lot.
Like this community-based impact innovation loop that just continually keeps going in like the pursuit of excellence. And that's a great mindset to have. Of course, you have that as the entrepreneur, and it's great to see that, you know, at least on the outside, I would assume the team has also adopted that kind of personality, that spirit that comes along with that. My question for you, Emily, would be this. This is a question, I don't think there's a straight answer for this. I think everyone's different, but like,
let's see.
With all of those ideas, right? I mean, like every time a community or someone would say something like, you know, it's like a squirrel. Oh, like, you know, you get distracted almost sometimes. Like, I'm curious to know, like, as the leader of the organization, like, how do you prioritize your responsibilities?
Yeah, I mean, I think that right now, priorities are, yeah, how we spend our time is where we're driving our impact. So that's the most important thing that we have. And the only resource we can get more of is time. I really focus on my routine and being very clear about, like, every month, what kind of meetings I need to have, you know, KPIs and reports with each of our teams, being very clear on exactly what we need from them. Now, at the end of the year, for example, this is the best time for me to take a step back during the holidays and look at what is our company positioning, really dive into the strategy piece. And I think at the end of the day, as a CEO, we're the vision holders, the strategy holders of the company, kind of like steering a ship. And as an entrepreneur, especially of a startup that's bootstrapped, and I'm also very operational. So, you know, I'm doing onboarding sometimes to help, you know, new members. And then I'm, you know, presenting to, you know, SOCAP in California the next day. And so, so I have to be very careful about my time. And I think that, you know, especially external events, I've become much more selective in making sure that, you know, I really am with the team as much as I can be. But then when I'm not, that I'm at events that are really high impact for the organization. But I think that, you know, blocking time on the calendar, having reoccurring meetings, even meeting like blocks of time just for myself to make sure that I'm able to dedicate time to different areas of the business, that's been the best way for me to not lose myself in different projects. And I think that resource allocation is also critical. And so if you have, you know, company priorities, and I say, okay, this year, for example, just for impact, I have a someone who leads our impact initiatives within the company. We already have a calendar this year for what we're going to do in impact and how we're going to push the envelope and how we're going to, what projects. And so I try to go into the year with as much of that defined as possible. That really helps make things flow more smoothly. But things always come up during the year. So we have to be careful and put filters on. And, you know, sometimes we have amazing ideas in the middle of the year. We say, okay, we have to do this, and we reorganize and reprioritize, but that's just a part of it, you know?
Of course. Well, it seems like you're really, you know, filling the gap. You're kind of doing what's needed, of course. And, you know, the role is always changing, so that your priorities are always changing. But I'm glad you're using your time wisely. You have to, right? It's the most valuable resource you have. And just another follow-up question on that, though, is like, you know, what do you think you're challenged most right now? Like, what do you think your growing edge is right now?
Yeah, I think right now, in Brazil specifically, our biggest challenge is that we have a big brand awareness. But I think that we still have a lot of non-consumers. So people, and I hear this all the time, people say, oh, I love the brand, I love the communications, I've been following you guys and so on, but they haven't tried the product yet. And I'm kind of like, what is going on? You know? And so I think that there is a big psychological barrier in this space specifically around reuse. And, you know, women spend decades using the same products. And basically whatever the mom gives them, whether it's a tampon or a pad, or, you know, they use for years without even questioning it. And so, you know, education, but not education in kind of an eco-shaming way, you know, and we don't want me to be like, you're doing something bad and you need to change to do that, doesn't work. And so we really focus on kind of the aspirational, inspiring, and making that invitation for people to make this change in their life. And I think also, you know, kind of the word of mouth, how can we stimulate the word of mouth? Right now, for example, 20% of our sales comes from word of mouth, someone that a friend told them. And so we're seeing a lot of women that try that love the product. And then when they're with their girlfriends or they're at the hair salon or they're, you know, they're having a conversation about that experience in a way that's very organic. But for sure, that's our biggest challenge, is kind of getting that final conversion step. And brand awareness, we always work on, but I think it's more about that behavior change, really.
Yeah, I love that. It's like you have, you know, like super fans as well. Like they love the brand, they love the community, and then when they try it, it all makes sense. You know, it's like you've heard those lyrics forever, you know, and then like you go through your first breakup, and then the lyrics make sense, and then you kind of have that bond with that artist, you know. So I love what you guys are doing. It's great to see that the word of mouth is still a thing, right? It's still trusted connections, and certainly an area we're focused on this year. Just a question for the mentors that you've had. Obviously, you know, you wouldn't be here had it not been for the people who've advised you, mentored you, been with you, been a sounding board for you. Like, who are those people, and what do you think you admire most about those individuals?
Yeah. Well, I have so many mentors. I think that's one of the things as a young person in my career, starting at Deloitte, for example, I proactively asked people to be my mentor. It was like asking someone on a date, you know? You know, I would see someone, I would say, oh, this person works on things that are really interesting that I would like to grow in that area. And I would go and say, would you be a potential mentor for me? And so I've always sought out mentors. I still have a lot of mentors from my career at Deloitte, from Novartis as well, from my MBA. In Brazil specifically, I have met such an amazing community of entrepreneurs here and executives that have been extremely helpful in our journey as well. So we're part of the Endeavor Network, for example, the EY Entrepreneur of the Year. We were part of that network as well. And so very, very thankful for, you know, all of the advice that they've been able to give us. But I think that it's important to acknowledge that we don't know everything. I mean, a lot of things, and especially as an entrepreneur, we have to level ourselves up every year as the business grows. And so we have to grow faster than the business. and that's why it's so important for us to proactively seek out people to help us. You know, one founder in particular, the founder of About You, is one of the biggest fashion chains in Europe, based in Hamburg in Germany. He's like an amazing mentor for me, has helped us a lot in the journey as well. Founder Dominique from Amaro, amazing, a big chain as well in Brazil. So yeah, very, very important. It's important that we seek out those people to help us.
Love that. And
yeah.
I just think it's always important to ask. We don't ask it enough, because I think people see, you know, leaders that are out there and they see the success, they see the growth, but you know, the easiest thing one can do to take a step in the right direction is have the humility to ask for a mentor. And those people end up being, you know, the most best time you can spend, speaking of time, right? So we've all got them. Emily, another question we have here at Real Leaders is, we know there are more real leaders out there. When you think of a real leader, who do you know personally that should come on the Real Leaders podcast?
Wow. So I don't know if you've ever spoken with Rachel Maya, but she is an executive from Brazil, who was the CEO of Tiffany's and of Lacoste, a number of different large brands here. And she is a mentor of Panties. She formally mentored us for a while as well. And I think just such a reference for entrepreneurship and female leadership in Brazil. So I would definitely recommend her.
Good. We'll love to get an introduction to her as a part of our kind of goal to continue to keep inspiring more real leaders out there in the world. In all of this, Emily, it's been a pleasure speaking with you today. In all of this, what is your definition of a real leader?
I think that we are in a transition from leaders that were very top down and kind of directive for decades to now leaders that are focused more on listening than directing. And so that's something for me that has been really important in my journey, is to become more of a listener and try to hear as many perspectives as I can before we make critical decisions. So I would say being very open and being focused not on being right, but finding the right solution. And I think as a second part to that, pushing the envelope, you know, not kind of pushing the status quo and not accepting okay performance or okay impact or okay products, and, you know, really trying to drive excellence in every part of the business. I think that that's really what motivates me, and I feel very driven by that, very motivated by that.
Well said, Emily. Thank you so much for your time today. For Emily Yule, I'm Kevin Edwards, asking you to go out there, listen, don't direct, and always keep it real. Thanks, Emily.
Thanks, Kevin.
Hey, Real Leaders, thanks again for listening to this amazing episode. And if you're someone like me who goes all the way to the end just to make sure I can extract as much information, education, and inspiration out of every single interview, might I suggest you check out our magazine. If you go online to realleaders.com today, you're going to get the first 30 days for free, where you're going to be able to access all of our magazines, courses, and live events from some of the top thought leaders around the world. All you have to do is go online to realleaders.com and click the subscribe button in the top right corner to get your free 30-day trial right now. Again, that's real-leaders.com. Thanks again for being a real leader, and always keep it real.